From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
TGIF, ladies and gents, welcome to Current Sports on this fantastic Friday. Hope you all are closing out the work week very, very well, and hope it's a productive one. Man, do we have a show for you today to close out things. We're going to talk boxing today as Floyd Money Mayweather, the Grand Rapids native who has turned top boxer in the entire biz, he gets it on against a very, very formidable challenger in Marcos Maidana. We'll talk about that. And there is also one local boxer from Inkster, Michigan, who will also be a part of that that card on tomorrow night around 9 p.m., and that is Jaylion Love. And Jaylion, he is really a really talented boxer, a young boxer who is a part of the Money Team. And right from Inkster, Michigan, used to reside in Dearborn Heights, Michigan as well, right near my high school, actually, at Annapolis High School in Dearborn Heights. He's really blown up into quite the special boxer. We're going to have Ali Easley on, our local boxing expert, Ali Easley, who is the head trainer over at the Crown Boxing Club here in Lansing, Michigan, also the founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation, does so much around the community. But we're going to have Ali on to talk about Jaylion, as he has made a few trips to his gym, Crown Boxing Gym, and you know, he knows a few personnel that that are associated with Jaylion Love. We'll give you a preview of that fight and talk a little bit about Love, and also we'll talk Mayweather and Maidana, and we'll give you our thoughts and predictions. And you know what, folks? I'm going to say it, man. I think Mayweather is going to lose. I think Money Mayweather is going to lose finally against Marcos Maidana. I'll give you my reasons in just a sec. You know, I was just debating about this the other day. You know, actually all week, not the other day, all week with a few friends of mine who are huge Floyd Mayweather fans. It's going to be a fun fight. I think it's going to be an entertaining fight. And, of course, Marcos Maidana knocking out Floyd's quote-unquote little brother, Adrian Broner. The kid's good, okay? This is a fight that if Mayweather does win, I can finally look at somewhere on his record and say, okay, he beat Maidana. That's pretty impressive. So it's going to be a fun time. We'll talk about that. And also the Tigers, who have just reached an agreement with Joe Hanrahan. We'll talk about that. Reflection Friday is also today. And J.Rue Campbell, interesting news about him. So much going on. We will be taking your calls like we do each and every show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls throughout this entire show. And also want to remind you all that Current Sports TV, we're back at it again next week, as I sit down with the deputy athletic director for Michigan State University, Greg Iani. He's the guy in charge of the athletic facilities around the campus of Michigan State, as far as the Breslin Center, Jennison Fieldhouse, Spartan Stadium. You know, he's really the head man when it comes to all of those operations, and as far as maintenance goes, of course, with the North End Zone project happening over at Spartan Stadium, the new ice being laid down at Mon Ice Arena. You know, Greg is the man, so we'll have him on, and you know, hopefully we'll get a tour and have some footage for you from that tour of the new North End Zone at Spartan Stadium. So if you want to be a part of that live audience next week, folks, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. It's always a fun time each and every Friday night here at the WKAR TV studios, located right here on the campus of Michigan State University. All right, well, let's waste no more time. Let's dive right into it, folks. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 2nd, 2014. You know what? I found this story relatively interesting, to say the least. If you didn't know, of course, amidst this whole Donald Sterling situation that's going on, you know, with his racist comments, being banned from the NBA, being fined, you know, the $2.5 million. You know, the NAACP, you know, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, it's really interesting what the L.A. chapter had in the plans before this story broke about Sterling. Now, again, after coming under fire, once it was revealed that the L.A. chapter of the NAACP had plans to honor, Yes, honor L.A. Clipper owner Donald Sterling. Chapter president Leon Jenkins has stepped down, and deservedly so. They were going to honor this man. The same group centered towards the advancement of African Americans. This group was going to honor a man who made crazy comments, as you we've been talking about here day in and day out on the show, about the African American race. The NAACP chapter of L.A. we're going to honor this man. Now, days following Sterling's ban from the NBA for racial comments, it was made public that the chapter honored Sterling with a Lifetime Achievement Award. My goodness, can you believe that? That's crazy. That's crazy. And this is back in 2009, and they planned to do so again this month. So it was going to be a second Lifetime Achievement Award from the L.A. chapter from the NAACP. Can you believe that? Oh, my goodness. Now, reports indicate Sterling donated $45,000 to the chapter since 2007. Jenkins has said the chapter planned to return the money. In his resignation letter, Jenkins said that in order to separate the Los Angeles NAACP and the NAACP from the negative exposure, I have caused the NAACP, I respectfully resign my position as president of the Los Angeles chapter. That blows my mind. That's crazy. So he's already been honored with one, and then we're going to give him another one this month. Can you believe that? Okay. All right. J'Rue Campbell, folks. A 17-year-old Detroit Castec football star, J'Rue Campbell, accused of slamming a school security officer on the floor, agreed to a plea deal this morning that will result in his criminal record being erased if he successfully completes all the terms. Now, as a part of the plea, J'Rue, he must attend and participate in psychological counseling and anger management classes until he is discharged. He must also write a letter of apology to the officer that he injured that will be read in court, and he will undergo a psychological evaluation prior to sentencing and pay any unpaid medical bills of the victim. So the felony charge of assault with intent to do great bodily harm was dismissed, and he pleaded guilty to the misdemeanor charge of aggravated assault. So he's taken the plea deal and has agreed to those three terms. And, I think this was the best case scenario for this young man. And we'll talk about J'Rue later on in the show. You can give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527. All right, and 2 days after Michigan State lost out on the services of Southern California transfer Byron Wesley, the Spartans, Michigan State men's Spartans basketball team, are apparently in the mix for a big man from South Florida. Now, his name is John Ibunu, a 7-foot center transferring after his freshman season at USF. He has visited MSU, according to a Thursday report, and he will visit Georgetown this weekend, while Florida and Arizona are also in the running for his services. Now, Ibunu will have to sit out for one season before becoming eligible to play at a new school after his scholarship release was granted Tuesday. Now, he is the fifth player to transfer from the program since South Florida, fired coach Stan Heath after the season. So what a catch that'll be, a 7-footer. I mean, if you've seen the kid play, he's got a lot of talent. He's really, really tall. Again, if he does transfer, though, he will have to sit out for one season, so we won't get to see his immediate impact with the team. But that will be a pretty good catch, especially after losing, a big man like Adrian Payne. So we'll see how that turns out. And cool news here. I really, really was happy when reading this story. Michigan State and Notre Dame, they have met 94 times in men's basketball, but the last time was on March 18th, 1979. If that year rings a bell in any way, shape, or form. Of course, it was an Elite Eight win for the Spartans, 80-68 under head coach Judd Heathcote. The MSU team, they won the national title that year, and the basketball guys have decided to bring that rivalry back. How about that? MSU will travel to Notre Dame on December 3rd. ESPN announced this. The schools will play at Notre Dame's Joyce Center, with time and TV information to be announced. Now, Notre Dame leads the all-time series 59-35, with the first meeting coming in 1908. Now, the schools met at least once a season from the 1945-46 season through 1974-75. So this is kind of renewing that rivalry between MSU and Notre Dame on the hardwood. Going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. It's really cool. I'm glad the schedule makers definitely put that one in the books. All right, and the Breslin Center is going to get a new update here. As a part of the university's energy transition plan, the Breslin Center will receive new LED lights over the summer. Yeah, the project is slated to start in July. Will cost around $910,000 with a 9.5-year payback on the investment due to lower energy costs. So, this is coming from Diane Baker, who is the Chief Planning and Projects Officer for MSU's Residential and Hospitality Services Department. She said, quote, "This should improve the fan experience. It's improved lighting along with more energy efficient lighting." Now, Munice Arena received a similar upgrade last summer as university moves to become more energy efficient. And, you know, Diane went on to say that it will really bring a cool vibe to player introductions as well. So that should be really cool stuff. Breslin, again, getting new LED lights this summer. Look forward to seeing that next season. And the Detroit Tigers, looking to shore up a shaky bullpen, have reached an agreement with reliever Joel Hanrahan. Now, the 32-year-old will likely move into the pen as a setup man as Bruce Rondon got hurt and Phil Koch has struggled so far this season. Now, Hanrahan is a year removed from, of course, the Tommy John surgery and last played for the Red Sox. We'll dive into this move as the Tigers try to salvage that terrible bullpen of theirs. Actually ranks, you know, second from last in the entire MLB, which is crazy to me. But if you want to give your thoughts on it, again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The Tigers get back in action today. The Tigers travel to Kansas City today to open up a 3-game series against the second-place Royals. Now, Rick Porcello is set to take the mound tonight against KC's James Shields, and Drew Smyly is slated to start Saturday against Danny Duffy, with JV, Justin Verlander, closing the series Sunday versus Jason Vargas. Now, the Royals are 4 games back in the loss column to Detroit and the only other division team currently above 500. So we'll see how that plays out. Should be an exciting weekend for baseball. And Lansing United, Lansing's newest minor league soccer team. How about that? They start their first preseason game of the season today versus Ann Arbor Football Club. That's today again at 5 o'clock, a 5 o'clock kickoff at the East Lansing Soccer Complex. The weather's a little chilly, but, you know, still go out there and support. This is their first preseason game as they get prepared to really kick off. That should be fun stuff. So definitely, if you're going out there, bundle up, to say the least. All right, and Mayweather, Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana. Yeah, he's back in the ring, folks, putting his undefeated record on the line. The champ is currently, again, he's 45-0, has never lost. I don't even know what the word to lose means. And about to face one of the hottest boxers in the game in Marcos Maidana, who is coming off a knockout victory, of course, of Adrian Broner. It's really cool because there's a local tie to this weekend as well as Jaylion Love, who is an up-and-coming star in the world of boxing, right? From this great state of Michigan, grew up in Inkster, Michigan. Jaylion is going to also fight on the pre-fights around 9 o'clock. He'll be taking on Marco Parabin. And in just a minute, we're going to have Ali Easley, who is the head trainer over at the Crown Boxing Club here in Lansing, Michigan. Ali Easley is going to kind of talk to us about Jaylion. He knows him a little bit and has seen him in the ring. He's actually visited the Crown Boxing Club here in Lansing, Michigan a few times. So Ali is going to be on air with us to give us a preview of that fight and to also talk about Money Mayweather and Maidana taking place tomorrow. Should be two good fights there and a few other impressive fights also slated for the undercard. So he'll be joining me around the 125-130 mark. And to close out our headliners here, just two more. Magic Johnson, have you seen this, folks? Less than an hour after, we talked about this yesterday about Mike D'Antoni, now the former coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. But, you know, less than an hour after Mike D'Antoni was fired from the Lakers, Michigan State legend and former L.A. Laker Magic Johnson sent out a very interesting tweet saying, quote, "Happy days are here again. Mike D'Antoni resigns as the Lakers coach. I couldn't be happier." The tweet really surprised many out there, including myself. You know, anytime you're rejoicing about somebody losing his job, I mean, that's just kind of below the belt for me. We'll talk about that later on and give you some more in-depth feelings on that one as well, okay? And, you know, Los Angeles Clippers and this whole Los Angeles Clippers fiasco that's been going on, it came out recently that L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling is actually battling cancer. The 80-year-old Sterling has been battling prostate cancer for an extended period of time and is assumed, is really in the later stages of it right now. Sterling was banned for life, of course, from the NBA. For his racist remarks that were published by TMZ. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We will talk about anything that is on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, we have a lot to talk about. You know, we had a lot to talk about yesterday, too, so much so that we actually did not finish this conversation on the show. You know, if you followed us yesterday, we talked about the whole Jameis Winston story. Jameis Winston, who was actually caught not paying for crab legs. Hilarious story. Not paying for crab legs. He goes home. He totally forgets the local market. They alert the authorities. The authorities come to Jameis Winston's residence and say, hey, you didn't pay the $30 or so for the crab legs. Jameis says, oh, I totally forgot, even though he didn't go back and pay for them. And, you know, they hit him with a civil citation where he has to, you know, do community service hours. Really odd story. And, you know, we talked about it here. We talked about it during our last segment of yesterday's show and really didn't finish the conversation. So, Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm guessing I'm going to have to, you know, bring the energy for myself and Alex because I'm guessing he's doing some finals-related stuff today.
He is.
That would make sense. So I'm going to try and bring the energy level up.
Oh, yeah. The controversial. So, you know, Alex always brings the controversy
right.
whenever he's
on the
show.
I'm going to be arguing with myself.
Exactly.
Little bit here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how Alex is, man. But, yeah, Alex is definitely finishing up finals right now as, of course, this is finals week for many students here at Michigan State University. But yeah, going to that Jameis Winston conversation that we started yesterday, Matt, you know, this isn't surprising when it comes to Jameis Winston. Looking at his history with little incidences here and there, we mentioned yesterday about, you know, last November, the AP uncovering city records that showed that Winston and some teammates were questioned by police regarding a BB gun battle. 1 year earlier, he had been accused by a Burger King employee of stealing soda from the restaurant last July. Of course, we know the big run-in with the law that he had with the whole sexual assault case, which was eventually settled. You know, this type of, and you know, I talked about yesterday, just this type of repetitive, just small things. It's becoming way too repetitive for me now, Matt. And you think, you know, as time goes on, one, maybe two instances, it's like, okay, you're a college kid, you're in that college environment, okay, but three and four instances now, and we're still hearing about these little things here and there that are just adding up to just become just headaches. And at some point, you just got to grow up here. You know, you talk about this incident with Jameis Winston. At some point, you just got to grow up and, you know, and be a leader, because Jameis is right now, he's the face, arguably the biggest face for FSU right now. I mean, he's a great quarterback. He's a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback as a freshman, for goodness sake. You know, you see his face left and right. He's the face of the football program. If you anytime you bring up FSU, you hear about him. He's the standard right now. He's kind of a mantra for this school. And anytime you're in the spotlight, now granted, we are talking about a freshman here. I mean, he's still young. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, we had Mike Ferentino on the TV show last night, who is a young star for the MSU hockey team, who's in the spotlight. I mean, I was talking to Jason Vlahos the other day, and his son is actually a huge, huge Mike Ferentino fan. And, you know, he gets stopped left and right here and there from people who enjoy his work on the ice. Anytime you're in that public spotlight here, the point I'm trying to make, anytime you're in that public spotlight, you have to learn how to handle yourself. Not only on the field or on the ice or on the gridiron, wherever you're at, but off it as well. And off of it being the most important aspect, because now you got a target on your back. You have a huge target on your back. And I think this is a learning lesson for Jameis Winston. And if he has one more incident, I think he will be an idiot to have one more, because this is becoming just kind of the run of the mill now for Jameis Winston.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you would think that the sexual assault case and all the attention that came with that would be the wake-up call that you're kind of talking about him eventually
like
getting, you would think that would kind of, you know, turn the light bulb on and be like, oh, wow, maybe I should kind of straighten myself out. That obviously is not happening. I would also say that he's probably bigger than just the face of Florida State. Mm-hmm. He's probably the most high-profile athlete in college football right now.
Yeah,
I mean, Johnny Manziel is gone. He's going to the pros. He was the previous kind of bad boy poster child.
Right.
Now it's kind of going to Jameis Winston. I mean, remember last year, the attention that Johnny Manziel got for getting kicked out of a frat party at Texas.
Huge coverage on that.
I mean, big story for a week. Mm-hmm. And now this is coming out this year. You know, his second or third brush with the law. Not a good trend for Jameis Winston. You would think he would kind of become that mature athlete. He is still a young kid.
He is.
And that, you know, that's definitely part of it. But at the same time, in this accelerated culture where you're making an announcement on where you're going to college and it's on ESPN and all these networks, when you're playing in a national championship game, right, you would think you would become accustomed to that kind of attention and realize that you kind of have to live your life in a different way, at least in terms of the public eye. That sort of lesson is not sinking in with Jameis Winston. I think if he doesn't, you know, obviously straighten himself out soon, he could be jeopardizing his professional career. Because
yeah, he could. He could.
Franchises are not going to put up with this kind of stuff.
Right.
He might get away with it now, but sooner or later, it's going to catch up with him.
Right. You know, it's easier for us to say and sit here and say, you think he learned by now. And you think he would, to be honest with you. I mean, both of me, you and I, we went to MSU. We know that there are parties everywhere. The social atmosphere of MSU is like nationwide renowned. You know, one of the top party schools in the nation. We know that. But I've always said, when you are in that type of spotlight and, you know, the spotlight is always on you as a representation in the world of athletics at a Division I college and school, you got to learn. Now, granted, you're going to have instances where you might do something stupid and it might end up in the paper. I mean, it happens like that. We've seen that with count from multiple athletes here at Michigan State. But you got to learn from it. And that's the thing that we're not seeing from Jameis right now. And this is just a stupid. I mean, how do you go get crab legs and just not pay for it? I mean, it's just, those just little things that are just common sense.
Now, do you think it's a result of him, I don't want to say getting away with, but his past indiscretions, there hasn't really been
no
a big penalty.
Yeah, exactly. No repercussions for him.
So do you think he's kind of reached a status where he thinks he's untouchable?
I think so. And, you know, it's an interesting article that Yahoo Sports had yesterday about that, how the perception that, you know, Jameis Winston has been through instances like this and has really never been punished for it or reprimanded for it. Where the point is, you know, if I'm not getting punished for this, maybe I can just continue this.
Right. Why wouldn't I keep doing it?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely been allowed in many facets when it comes to FSU. Hopefully this is a wake-up call for him. I thought it was a hilarious story at the end of the day. And, you know, I brought up this argument to end yesterday's show. You know, we always have the conversation of possibly paying college athletes, you know, and you know, giving them what many feel as though they deserve with their name and recognition being out there and the amount of money they bring to a university like a Division I college such as FSU. And, you know, or at least allowing them to pursue endorsement deals. Now, the question for me, though, is if they are mature enough to handle the amount of money and everything that comes with it. Because for me, when you talk about endorsement deals and you're talking about different companies out there, you have to not only represent yourself in a classy manner, but you're not only representing yourself, but you're representing that company, whoever is endorsing you, whether it be McDonald's or Burger King or Pepsi, whoever that endorser is, you're representing that company. And no one wants a kid who is always in the paper in the most recent accusation of stealing, of walking out and not paying for crab legs. I mean, come on now. I mean, you have to handle yourself in a certain degree, and it kind of argues against this point because of paying college athletes, because we've seen so many young college athletes who aren't mature enough to handle the public spotlight. And how do you think endorsers are going to look at you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and as a college athlete, you have all these opportunities that maybe, you know, non-athlete students have. You know, all these doors are open that wouldn't be open if you were just an average Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And to add on top of that, here's $1,500 a month.
Oh, man.
I mean, some of these kids, you never see them again.
You're going to lose their mind.
Exactly. I
making
mean,
it rain.
It's just, maybe. Right. Maybe they would be making it rain. I don't know. But either way, I mean, there's just a lot of temptation that could be there.
It is.
There's just a lot of negative things. And I'm not saying that all college athletes across the board are not ready for that kind of responsibility or opportunity. I'm just saying there's going to be a pretty large subsection of them who just aren't ready. I mean, that's an 18-year-old kid,
right, right,
who for the first time in his life can do whatever he wants.
And it depends on the maturity of the kid, too, like
exactly.
You just said. It definitely depends. But I guarantee you that the majority of young college athletes out there are still maturing here. You know what I mean? They still have that mentality that they don't know how to handle money like that. I mean, money is thrown in their face like that. And again, when you talk about the colleges aspect in this argument, colleges are very wary, and I'm pretty sure many of them are against paying college athletes for the reason that if you do start giving them endorsement deals and allowing them to pursue those avenues, again, they're not only representing themselves, they're not only representing the product of which they're endorsing, but they're representing the school as well. And that could be a bad look for the university. And we know how Division I college athletics are. They do not want negative press in any way, shape, or fashion, or form when it comes to their overall perception of a Michigan State University or a Florida State University, whatever university that is. They don't want negativity. If they have one of their premier athletes being caught in negative press for something they're doing, it makes the whole look bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can't have that, and I don't think universities will stand for it.
No.
It'd be interesting to see if you know, they do kind of go down that avenue where they are paid, a kid gets in trouble like that, is he just gone? Out of school? Mm. Kicked out of school? I mean, where does the discipline eventually come? Because, I mean, if you're going to pay these kids, sometimes you're setting yourself up to fail. Because, right, like we said, some kids just can't handle it.
They just can't handle it. I totally agree. All right, if you want to weigh in on this, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We are taking your calls throughout this entire show. Really briefly, Matt, before we hit the first break, the Tigers, they have acquired Joel Hanrahan, who is he's coming in as a great relief pitcher. I thought it was a great move to get Joel. He was highly sought after by multiple teams. Again, he's likely to move into the pen as a setup man. It's so crazy here, Matt, because it seems as though for the past few seasons, we've just been singing this same old tune, this same old song of Detroit and their weary bullpen. And, you know, they've tried so many avenues, so many things here and there, bringing in guys left and right, bringing them up from the minors and tweaking their lineup here and there. Nothing has seemed to work. Of course, you know, bad luck here as Bruce Rondon got hurt. Phil Koch has certainly struggled this season. I thought overall, looking at, you know, Joel's record and, you know, the things he's done in the past, he's a year off Tommy John surgery now. He's fully healed and ready to get back out there on the mound. He's had 100 career saves, an all-star with the Pirates. I think this is going to be a good move for them, and I think it's long overdue without a doubt, due to the fact that the Tigers bullpen, again, they have a 5.37 ERA, the second worst in the majors. That's inexcusable, especially when you contrast that with how outstanding the starting pitchers are for the Tigers. It's inexcusable. I think changes needed to be made. I think Joe will come in and really be a kind of a spark plug for that bullpen.
I do too. And you know, it's getting to the point where the Tigers are approaching, you know, the Lions defensive back status, where it's just ineptitude.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
they just can't get it done, except it's even more glaring because around the bullpen, Tigers are arguably the best team in baseball.
Right.
You know, so this is the one thing that's holding them back from winning a World Series or a couple of World Series. I think the pickup is great. A year removed from Tommy John surgery, guys usually come back throwing harder and better than they did before the injury. That's one of the greatest, you know, advancements in sports science over the last 20 years has been Tommy John surgery. He's 32. He's still got a lot of tread on the tires. It's not like them signing Joe Nathan, who's pushing 40 and hoping that he can be the guy that he was, because he struggled too. It's not just the setup men that have had their troubles this year. I do think, though, adding anyone really, as many bodies as you can get, because sooner or later they're going to find a guy who fits. Hopefully Hanrahan's the guy.
Yeah, and this definitely needs to happen because it's certainly been the Achilles heel of the Tigers. Once they figure out the bullpen, the sky's the limit for the Tigers. But
Absolutely.
Until that problem gets solved, which this is a good step toward that direction, until that problem gets solved, though, the Tigers are still going to be lagging in that area. So, all right, if you want to weigh in on any of this, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We're going to hit our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the head trainer of the Crown Boxing Club and also founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation, Ali Easley. He's going to give us kind of a preview of the Jaylion Love Inkster native as he fights tomorrow on the undercard. And we'll talk Mayweather and Maidana, all that and so much more. Stay tuned.
We related through a drunken speech.
welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I am pretty excited about Saturday night, folks. Saturday night, Floyd Money Mayweather gets in the ring with Marcos Maidana as he puts his undefeated record on the line once again. It's May-per-view, as Floyd likes to call it. Should be a great fight, but, you know, I also love Saturday night fights in May when Floyd's fighting because you get to see a lot of talent on the undercard, the fights that ensue before Mayweather gets in the ring to do his thing. And, you know, one of those fighters happened to be a native of Michigan, Inkster, Michigan resident, Jay Leon Love, who has an impressive record right now, an up-and-coming phenom in the boxing world, is with the Mayweather team. And actually, I was watching the All Access on Showtime, you know, just kind of previewing the Mayweather and Maidana fight. And all of a sudden, there out pops Jay Leon Love talking about how there's a lot of pressure to make sure that the money team is always on top and always rack up wins. So we'll get to see Jay Leon in action tomorrow on the undercard. And we have a man that knows a thing or two about Love's game, Ali Easley. He is the head boxing trainer over at Crown Boxing Club in Lansing, Michigan, and the founder of a Helping Willing Kid Foundation. Ali, how you doing? Been a long time since we heard from you.
Oh, I'm doing well, Al. I appreciate the opportunity to come on. How have you been?
Oh, doing very, very well, and we thank you for coming on with us today. I got to ask you, you know, Ali, you've seen Jay Leon in action and know a little bit about him. I believe he's come to the gym a few times. How did you get acquainted with Jay Leon Love in his fighting?
Well, I mean, I met, Jay Leon along with many other amateur fighters over the years just from taking our team, the Crown Boxing Club, around the state of Michigan to compete at different events. And, you know, him, like all the other up-and-coming amateur boxers, were at these events. So come to know each other pretty well and pretty good friends with his coaches and, fought against them a couple of times. So, you know, we've known each other pretty well over the last maybe 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I got to ask, Ali, I've never seen Jay Leon fight before. For our listeners who also haven't seen him in the ring, what type of fighter is he and what has led to this unbelievable stamp that he's trying to put on the amateur boxing world right now?
Well, you know, he, as an amateur, you know, I don't remember him really winning any significant, you know, amateur title. And but yet he seemed to have a great translation to a pro career. So, you know, he might have been one of these guys that didn't really have a lot of success in the scoring that was done in amateurs back then and somehow translated that to a, you know, a very successful professional career. He's certainly had a lot of success in his first, you know, 15, 16 fights he's had.
Mm, yeah, without a doubt. And it's going to be a great time to see him in the ring, on the undercard. Right before the Mayweather and Maidana fight, and I got to ask you, how did he get signed? I'm always curious to wonder this. How did he get signed in a part of Mayweather's camp? Of course, the famous boxing camp of Floyd Money Mayweather's, the richest camp in the nation and arguably the world when it comes to boxing. When you talk about that attention that comes with being a part of Mayweather's camp, I mean, how is Jay Leon handling that? And have you talked to his trainers about that?
Well, I haven't. I haven't actually talked to Love in a few years. I did run into one of his former trainers just recently. There was a little bit of, issues whenever he left the amateur ranks. You know, having boxed for Kronk, a lot of people assumed that he would stay on and box for Manuel Stewart, but he, you know, elected to go a different direction. But in everybody I talk to and from what I've seen, you know, the thing that he seems to be able to do very well is he keeps it simple, you know, just like Mayweather does. And people may not like that because they're not overly flashy, but they're just extremely simple, very simple, straight punches, straight combinations, and, very successful in doing that.
Right. Just get the job done, right? And, you know, looking at Jay Leon's record right now, he has 16 wins. His professional boxing record, 16 wins, 9 knockouts, 6 decisions, 0 losses, and 1 no decision. So he's certainly been having a very, very impressive career thus far. How good do you think he can be, Ali?
Well, I think he's got the opportunity to be very successful. I mean, first of all, he's aligned himself with a very notable, financially stable camp, and that always helps.
Yeah, it does.
when you got the financing behind you, it, you know, can really go a long ways, and you can dedicate your time to strictly training. He's still very young. I believe he's probably about 25 now. So, you know, he's still got, you know, in the next 5 years, he's been boxing maybe 5 years now. He'll have another opportunity to have another 15, 16 fights, so he could potentially, you know, get himself to something like 31-32-0, and, you know, there's no doubt that you're a very, very serious contender when you start looking at those numbers.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, the opponent that he will be facing tomorrow is Marco Perabin, who has 20 wins, 13 KOs, and one loss on his record. Do you know anything about Marco at all, Ali?
Well, I know that he, you know, he is a very tough-bred Mexican fighter, and oftentimes those records don't do those kids justice. I mean, some of these kids have been fighting in the streets for money since they were 6 years old, and his record might indicate he's got 20, 22 fights, but in reality, he might have hundreds of fights.
Right, right.
That's very hard to see whenever you're doing the scouting, so there's always concern. We've been in that situation with some other guys from our camps over the years that, you know, we thought we had the correct opponent to find out that it just wasn't to be. So, you know, hopefully they've done their homework and, you know, they feel confident in the fight, but at some point you do have to test the waters if you're going to take that next step.
So when scouting fighters, you know, and you talk about that paradigm when, you know, you're going to the ring thinking that you know everything about them, but like you said, sometimes the record can reveal, you know, hidden things as, you know, some of these fighters, like you said, have been fighting on the street and you know, probably have a different technique from what you see in the ring from, you know, their history fighting on the streets. I mean, that's got to be pretty difficult when it comes to just the scouting aspect of boxing as well, right, Ali?
Well, especially when you're scouting an athlete from another country, it can be very difficult. Here in the United States, you know, the United States Amateur Boxing Association is very, very well regulated. It's not difficult at all to find out information, how many years an athlete was registered with the organization, how many years he competed, you know, who he fought. Those records are pretty easy to obtain. You know, the United States does an excellent job in keeping those records and making it mandatory that athletes belong to it and are protected. Not only the athletes, but the coaches and the gyms, they're all protected as well. And other countries, you know, their records aren't always as well kept maybe. And it's easy to, you know, overlook somebody's amateur record if they didn't, you know, make it to the Olympics or win a significant international tournament. You know, you might overlook a kid who's got, you know, 100 and some fights experience, and you're thinking maybe he's only got 20 or 30.
Yeah, that can definitely be a challenge. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Ali Easley, who is the head boxing trainer over at the Crown Boxing Club right here in Lansing, Michigan. All right, Ali, well, before I let you go, you know, we're big on predictions here on Current Sports, and, of course, we're about to dive into Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana in just a second. Before Matt and I debate about it, I want to ask you, Ali, what are your thoughts on the fight, and do you think Mayweather pushes that undefeated record to 46-0?
Well, if it's not broke, you know, there's no sense in thinking it needs fixed. And, you know, the man has made a living ever since he was a young kid on just being so basic straight punches, basic defense. You know, you don't see him in there doing all the flashy, crazy stuff that maybe the crowd wants, and it's brought him a lot of success. And a lot of times athletes I've worked with over the years, they don't recognize sometimes they're winning when they're doing something simple. They feel the fight's too simple, that they need to do more, and that's maybe when they put themselves at risk. I think his success has been predicated upon keeping it simple. I don't see him changing that, and he'll know that he's winning the fight. He knows which punches score and which don't. And until we see otherwise, I don't see any reason to think he won't continue his success.
What would you call on this one, man? Do we go 12 rounds in the decision, or Mayweather gets a knockout?
Well, he's not really known as a knockout artist. I mean,
exactly.
He's really proficient in scoring and defense, and I don't see him wanting to put himself at risk at that age to take any punishment he doesn't have to. I see him scoring and moving and, you know, a fight probably going the distance and going to the cards.
That's how it always goes. That's the typical Mayweather fight resume. 12 rounds and win by decision. All right, before I let you go, Ali, if Mayweather does end his career undefeated, of course, I believe he has about 4 fights left on his current contract. He has been mentioning retiring here and there, especially throughout these past few weeks. When he does retire, and if he does retire with his career undefeated, unblemished, where do you rank him in history?
Boy, it's so hard to say. You know, boxing has evolved over the years. You have different weight classes, different opponents. But one thing you got to give him credit for is, you know, he's fought everybody. He's never seemed to dodge anybody. He's moved around and won in every weight class he's competed in. And he really got to consider mentioning him in the, top couple, 2 or 3 greatest of all time if he ends it like that.
Wow, there you have it. Spoken by the man himself, Ali Easley, the head boxing trainer over at Crown Boxing Club in Lansing, Michigan, and the founder of the incredible organization entitled To Help a Willing Kid. Gotta love that stuff. Hey, Ali, it was good chatting with you, and thank you for coming on today.
No problem. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. All right, well, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we're going to dissect the Floyd, Money Mayweather, and Marcos Maidana fight. I got an interesting prediction for you all. And we'll talk about Magic Johnson, Reflection Friday, so much more. Current Sports comes right back.
Bad communication, it's the hardest thing for me to do. And it's it, it's the most important part that relationships will go through. And I give it all away.
Hey, you know what, Matt? You know, speaking of Godzilla, you know, that new Godzilla movie looks pretty good. The new one's coming out. Yeah, it's Bryan Cranston, of course, who was a star of Breaking Bad. I'm looking forward to that movie. The preview looks pretty eerie.
Right. Well, as long as it's better than Godzilla 2000 with with Matthew Broderick and the Puff Daddy song.
I forgot about that. That Puff Daddy did do a song for that
movie.
He did.
He butchered Led Zeppelin's Cashmere and rapped over it. It was terrible. But yeah, I think that is a low bar to clear. I think they'll clear it. But I'm still kind of scarred by the experience of Godzilla 2000.
I remember my dad took me to go see that in 2000, me and my sister. And my sister, I remember looking over, and she fell asleep through the whole thing. I would never forget it. Yeah, it was pretty bad. At the end, even at the end, you thought it was going to be another one because they showed the egg, I think, was hatching or something like that. And they were like, okay, we never made any money on this.
By the way, this is a terrible flop. Maybe we shouldn't make that planned sequel. Yeah.
Let's not do that. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, Matt, you just heard from Ali Easley, who is, of course, the head trainer over at the Crown Boxing Club in Lansing, Michigan, who, really, he knows Jay Leon Love, who will be fighting on the undercard of the Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana fight, which will be taking place tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in beautiful Las Vegas. So let's dive right into this fight. We've talked about, you know, Floyd Mayweather a lot on this show and kind of previewed a few of his fights as of, you know, going back to last May. I forget who he fought. Was it Guerrero, I think it was, and he ended up getting a win winning by 12 by decision. But Mayweather just keeps racking in the wins. But I have an interesting take on this one, Matt. I think, you know, I've always had this complaint when it comes to Mayweather. And my complaint has always been that he is very, very tactical and very, very smart when it comes to picking his fighters. He's been flawless. I always go back to the Sugar Shane Mosley. The first time when Sugar Shane called out Money Mayweather, Mayweather kind of, you know, ducks and dodges it and says, we'll fight when the time is right. Lord and behold, Mayweather waits a few years until, you know, Mosley has a few more losses on his record. And, you know, he's battling father time. He's older. He says, all right, I'll get in the ring with you now. Very, very smart tactic, gets in the ring with him and defeats him. Oscar De La Hoya, almost the same scenario there. Waits till De La Hoya is old and decrepit and says, all right, well, let's get into the ring and let's fight, and defeats him. And, you know, and looking at the opponents other, you know, since the Mosley and De La Hoya card, I mean, he's really fought opponents that have really given him no challenge. They don't really have impressive records or impressive wins that you can point at and say, okay, this guy can really be a challenge. But I will say this, Matt. This is the first time, other than the Manny Pacquiao discussion, which I don't think that fight will ever happen, but this is the first time I can look at a fight on Mayweather's resume and say that if he beats this kid, kudos to you, my brother. Marcos Maidana is very, very impressive, especially looking at the history of fighters that he's fought, more specifically Mr. Adrian Broner, who he made look slight work during that last fight, putting Adrian Broner on his butt twice. The first time it's ever happened to Broner. And, you know, Broner was supposed to be the next prodigy. Mayweather part two was supposed to take over the reins after Mayweather left. And, you know, that never happened. And Maidana, I tell you, watching this whole, you know, Showtime All Access documentary, I believe the last one before the fight airs tonight. It's kind of a cool preview. But I tell you, this kid's tough. He hits very, very hard. That's what he's known for. You know, another thing that's really interesting about Maidana is that, which they really highlight throughout the series, is that his knockouts, which he has a very impressive resume when it comes to knockouts throughout the last four fights. In his last four fights, he's knocked out his opponents three times. Maidana, he attacks you in a very unorthodox way when it comes to the angles where he throws punches. Guys can't read his punches. That's been on his scouting report since he's entered the professional ranks. He's very impressive in that. He's not afraid of you, obviously, because everybody had Adrian Broner as an overwhelming favorite in that fight. He loves the chip on your shoulder underdog type of feeling that he has going to. He embraces that. He embraces that notion. And I love Robert Garcia as his trainer. Robert Garcia is really establishing himself as a trainer who is making a lot of noise in the boxing world. And I just think that Maidana is going to give him a lot of trouble in this fight. And he's going to focus on the body. If he can focus on that body and hurt Mayweather in the body, but it's tough because Mayweather is a very tactical defensive fighter, I do think he will get in there. And if he connects on one or two, it will hurt Mayweather, and I think he's going to down him. Now, that sounds crazy, right? Because I'm talking about 45-0 here. But I think it can, and I think it will happen. I think it will happen. I sound crazy right now, man. You should see my Twitter. You should see my GroupMe. You should see my Instagram right now. Everybody's thinking I'm crazy. But sooner or later, age and odds are the two factors that down a reigning king in the world of boxing. Mayweather's no spring chicken, and he's finally fighting somebody that has the attributes that you look for in a fighter that can do some things against Mayweather in the ring.
You make some valid points, but I guess my first question would be, how many times have you talked yourself in to a similar situation where you take the guy who's gunning for Mayweather? Well, how many times have you watched the Showtime series and gone, man, this kid's talented. He might have a shot. How many times?
I've said that, but
right.
This is the first time
okay.
I've actually gone with the other guy. Now, past I've said, okay, this guy could really get, but I still think Mayweather's going to win. This is the first time I'm saying this guy can really give Mayweather a lot of problems, and I think he will win. That's the first time I've said, this is the first time I've gone against Mayweather in the ring.
I commend you for it because I am not going to do that at all. I'm gonna stick with Mayweather. It's right. Just, you know, we hear every time there's a fight with Mayweather, we hear about how powerful the other guy is. How if he lands, like you said, if he lands one or two of those punches, Mayweather could be in trouble. The problem is no one can land those punches ever. It never happens. He's like
a
robot.
He's a
robot in the ring. I mean, outside the ring, you can talk about his discipline. You can talk about him. You know, maybe if he's too worried about buying the Clippers, he might not bring his A game on Saturday. But once he steps inside, he never loses focus. He's so disciplined. He knows what's going to happen before it happens. He moves so well. It's going to be interesting, but I just don't know how you could possibly pick against Floyd.
I sound crazy. I sound like I just, you know, I sound,
you sound like
I'm
a
on
promoter
right now.
You sound like a promoter.
I do.
You guys got to tune in because this could be the time. I'm sure that's what Showtime's doing too.
Like Don King right now.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I just think it's too tough to pick against him.
It is. It's very tough. And, you know, I have in the back of my mind just this notion that eventually Mayweather's going to lose.
It's got to happen.
And I just feel it, man. Looking at that Showtime, you talk about the distractions and the, you know, this week, I'm looking at this whole Showtime documentary, which is pretty good, to be honest. I mean, they do a great job with it. It's funny because every time they show Maidana, he's focused. He's watching the film. He's studying. He's training. He's doing that and this to prepare for the fight. Man, they go over to Mayweather. Mayweather's driving his million-dollar Bugatti, you know, buying five more cars. He's got women everywhere. He's flying a plane to go see a comedy show. I mean, he talks about breaking off his engagement with his now, you know, his ex now who's in L.A. and all this kind of all these distractions. You know what I mean? There's a lot of distractions here. And this is the first time that I've never, they're not even focusing on Mayweather in the ring anymore. But every time, like I said, when they show Maidana, he's in a, this kid is a, he's a pit bull, man. He's ready. He's ready for this fight. And this makes me question how mentally ready Floyd Mayweather is for this fight. It's the first time I've been able to say that.
You know, that's possible. So
then it talks about retirement. I mean, he's mentioned retirement like 5 times in the past like 2 weeks.
I guess if he's mentioning that, then wouldn't he want to go out with an unblemished record?
Yeah,
I think at this
doubt.
Point, you know, when he retires isn't as important as how he retires as far as if he has a loss in his record. I do like the kind of, Rocky narrative that Showtime is showing, apparently.
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious.
Just painting.
Yeah, they are definitely painting
Maidana
that.
As,
yeah.
as Stallone and
right.
Mayweather is totally Apollo Creed.
Oh, that's
right
Apollo
now,
Creed right there, yeah.
I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's
I just don't see it.
I would look like a genius if this pans out.
You will. But, I mean, again, how many times have people sat in the same seat you are and go, yep. man, I'm going to be a genius. Maybe I should put $100 on Maidana. Maybe I should. They talk themselves into it, and then they get disappointed, just like the 45 other times that Mayweather has gotten in the ring.
He's Mayweather, yeah.
The guy just does not lose.
It's tough. It's tough to pick against him. I'm going with Maidana, though. I think he could possibly knock him out.
It's bold.
It's very bold. I sound crazy right now by a lot of people, but I'm sticking with my guns here.
Good. You should.
All right, Matt. You know, something interesting here. Magic Johnson had some interesting comments over the Lakers firing of Mike D'Antoni, of course, who was a head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. He sent out a surprise tweet for me, Matt, because, you know, every time, you know, we mention Magic Johnson, he's just a very classy guy. He's very outspoken, though. When it comes to the Lakers, Magic has always been very, very outspoken when it comes to personnel changes, if it comes to a certain player. He has never really bitten his tongue in any regards or any respect when it comes to the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, of course, he has close ties with that organization, spending his entire career there. But for me, I think this kind of crossed the line a little bit here. Magic sent out a tweet less than an hour after it was released that Mike D'Antoni was fired from the Lakers, saying, quote, "Happy days are here again, exclamation mark. Mike D'Antoni resigns as the Lakers coach. I couldn't be happier," end quote, end tweet, I guess. For me, Matt, looking at that tweet, I understand there's probably a lot of fans out there, a lot of people out there, a lot Laker Nation out there is probably happy about this move. You know, it seemed as though Mike D'Antoni, when he first came to the Lakers organization, his style of coaching never really seemed to fit. You know, he loves that run-and-gun type of style that he tried to run in Phoenix. And in all honesty, Steve Nash was really the anchor of that. When you got a point guard who can run that type of offense and be successful at it, then, hey, you got to have the personnel to do that. The Lakers don't. And trying to force that type of play on the Lakers organization, then you have Kobe Bryant, who's out. Now, granted, this Laker team's roster certainly is shot. I think they didn't put the personnel in place for D'Antoni to try to be successful in the first place. It never really seemed to be a great marriage in the first place. But Mike D'Antoni being fired and Magic sending out those tweets, for me, it was just classless. You know, anytime you're rejoicing about somebody losing his job, a grown man losing his job, that enters a different realm for me, and it makes you a bit uncomfortable. It really surprised me that Magic sent out that tweet.
It is surprising, and, you know, it's one thing for a fan to do it. You know, Joe Schmo sitting on the couch,
right,
happy that D'Antoni got fired. But Magic Johnson owns part of the Dodgers. He is a multimedia mogul. I mean, he's everywhere.
Mm.
He embodies the Lakers. It's not his place.
No.
It's beneath him. And I think Charles Barkley said something along those lines.
Yeah, he did.
This is way below what Magic should be doing. He shouldn't even
be
worried about this.
Yeah, don't
exactly.
Even worry.
It's not his concern. One of the things you mentioned is how tight he is with the Lakers and how invested he is with the Lakers. And that's why I think it's odd that he was a name thrown around as a potential person to buy the Clippers.
Right,
because
right.
It just seems like he's still married to the franchise, and maybe that's why it is. And the other big name who's kind of lurking in this is Phil Jackson, who I think Magic wanted to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And when they decided to hire D'Antoni, kind of spurning Phil Jackson, and they go with D'Antoni instead, I don't think he agreed with that move from Jimmy Buss.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was upset about it when it happened. I think watching the team implode with Dwight Howard and Pau Gasol,
right,
people forget because it's been such a dark 2 years, but the Lakers were supposed to win the West last year.
They were.
They were supposed to be far and away the best team. They had four Hall of Famers in the starting lineup.
Right.
it was their year, and it absolutely went south. So I think that all kind of adds into it. It doesn't excuse the tweets.
No.
But you can kind of understand where he's coming from. He's just a frustrated Lakers fan. Yeah, I mean, when was the last time the Lakers were bad?
Right.
It just doesn't happen.
It does not happen. That was my next point. You know, it just shows, you know, Magic Johnson, of all people, showing, you know, putting out that tweet. It just kind of puts in perspective the desperation that the Lakers are in right now. I mean, they're in a moment right now where they don't know what it's like to lose here. And, you know, and for them to be in this type of situation, they know that things have to happen. Big changes have to be made. And, you know, when they are made or when a move is made, you're going to see reaction from the fans without a doubt. And now Magic Johnson, of all people, having the kind of reaction that he had, it just puts in perspective just how the moment of desperation that this squad is in right now. I think when Kobe comes back, I'm going to be real with you. I don't think Kobe's going to be the same player that we're used to seeing in the past. He's going to try to, because he's Kobe Bryant, for goodness sake. He has that competitive nature. He wants to step on your throat. He believes that he's Superman. He's going to come back and try to be that guy. I just don't think he will. Looking at the history of players who have tried to come back with Achilles injuries, and now, you know, he comes back from that and then has a knee injury. I mean, it shows that there's a lot of wear and tear on that body. He's going to have to adjust his game, kind of like Jordan did in the later part of his career. I mean, Jordan didn't become that slasher to the, you know, that high-flying dunk artist that we saw at the beginning of his career. He became more of a mid-range guy. You started to hear the whole phrase, the MJ fadeaway, come into play. You got to rely on his mid-range. I think Kobe is one of the greatest mid-range players of all time. But when he comes back, I don't think he will be the same player, though. But you got to surround him with pieces who can even out that absence, that offensive absence. And we just simply have not seen that. So
we haven't seen it at all. And, I mean, how much really can you expect Mike D'Antoni to win when Nick Young and Jody Meeks leading the team in scoring on certain nights? I mean, it's just like the talent wasn't there, especially after Kobe went down and after Dwight left.
Right.
But at the same time, the Lakers didn't play any defense since D'Antoni got there. And that's what killed them.
And he's not a defensive guy.
At all. And he doesn't make any, you know, any allusions to maybe he will become a defensive. He just doesn't care.
No,
I mean, there were reports from Lakers practice where they didn't even talk about defense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's ridiculous.
It says a lot.
That's half the game, guys.
Right, exactly.
So it was just a bad philosophy for L.A. It's going to be interesting to see who they go out and hire. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've heard Steve Kerr, his name thrown around.
Well, I saw this morning that Steve has actually came out and said that he's not in the running for the job. That's what I saw on ESPN today.
Personally, I wouldn't want the job.
Yeah,
I would not want to coach 39-year-old Kobe Bryant coming off an Achilles injury. No, thank you.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, real quick, Matt, favorite moment of the week. Favorite story of the week.
Oh, gosh. Favorite? It's not my favorite, but the biggest one, obviously, Mr. Sterling.
The Sterling. For me, I got to go with the MSU golf team. That unbelievable way to win a Big Ten championship. And also the David Sterling incident, which opened up a lot of conversations that were healthy in many regards, I think, for not only sports but culture. So,
what about your crab legs?
Oh, gotta love it. Of course. Yeah. I might get some this week. I might get some crab legs and watch Mayweather.
Make sure you pay for them, though.
I will. I'll do that. All right. Thanks so much to everybody tuning in to Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE's Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend. And be easy, people.